We now have Daniel. I hope I get it right, Diebler.
Diebler. Everybody gets it wrong. Don't worry about it.
Dan's with the League of Women Voters, and she's going to tell us about redistricting. And you probably know when you vote and stuff, where most of us in Sharp are in District 7 with a few scattered people in D5 because the lines are kind of strangely drawn. And maybe that's some of the stuff that Daniel can tell us about.
So I'm going to go through kind of a little bit of a primer on redistricting just to give people an idea of not necessarily what it is, but what the criteria are for how district lines get drawn. And then I'm going to go through a couple of case studies so that people can kind of understand a little bit better kind of a concept called communities of interest. And then I'll talk a little bit about San Francisco, and then I'll take questions. And I'll try to be quick because I know you guys are dealing with an hour time frame. So I want to make sure that we do get the opportunity potentially to take questions if people have them. Okay. All right. So redistricting, I look at it, it's a once in a, 10 years, once in a decade opportunity to redraw lines, right? And these are your supervisor districts. So the idea is that you would be able to create a more fair, equitable set of representation in local government. This is not necessarily, I'm going to talk more about local redistricting in San Francisco versus like the statewide redistricting effort that's going on right now that would redraw kind of state level supervisor, right, congressional kind of seats. That is going on at the same time as the local redistricting process is, and that will end sooner than the local redistricting process will as well. The local process will go through April 15th of 2022 because San Francisco is a charter city, so we have a slightly extended time to redraw our maps. So when you redraw district lines, you do it based on rank criteria. And the first criteria is equal population, right? You want roughly equal population between all of the different groups that you, all of the different lines that you're drawing. So you want an equal number of people. We also base it on the Voting Rights Act, which passed in around 2011, in the kind of the last run of redistricting. You want it to be a contiguous district. So you don't want, a little, circle of people in the Mission and a little circle of people in Soma, right, that make up a district. You want it to be a continuous line, and you want to keep your boundary lines intact. A big one this year is preserving communities of interest. And a community of interest, I'll go into this a little bit more, but it can be anything from your entire community is made up of mixed use property, right? You have some businesses on the bottom floor and some residential or properties that are on the top floors of buildings. It could be you speak a common language. It could be you have a shared concern, beach erosion, right? For instance. So you are very close to the Golden Gate Park. Right. So, and that becomes part of your community of interest. It doesn't necessarily need to be exactly what the traditional boundary lines are today. And then the other component is they want it to be geographically compact. I think in San Francisco, that's probably pretty easy to do, to be honest with you, right? We're a 7x7 city. It's not like we're sprawling all over the place. So just to get an idea, equal population does mean you have the same number of people within 1 or 2% in each district. But there are some allowances that can be made where you can get up to like a 4 or 5% differentiation, based on a community of interest being able to be kept intact in a particular area. So when the population changes, right, and the population has changed in San Francisco in the last 10 years, then we redraw those lines and they're based on the census data. And the census data that's going to be used for local redistricting, there have been some drops of census data over the last couple of months. It's a little bit late. COVID has delayed kind of everything, right, in life these days. But it is, the stuff that's going to be used for local redistricting will be dropped, I believe, on September 30th of this year. So those will be kind of the final numbers that we're going to be using and crunching for all the different districts. There was the Census Bureau did give some data at the end of August. And so you'll probably have started to see some articles in like the Chronicle and SF Gate that have like data analysts that are visualizing, different ways that you could lay out San Francisco. So I'm going to go into a case study. The case study is based on a town called Watts in California. So the two case studies I have are from Southern California, but they're a little bit more extreme. So they're easier to understand. Some of the stuff in San Francisco is a little bit more nuanced, right? Like in the last redistricting event that we had. So in 2003, November 2003, a freak storm dumped a bunch of rain and hail on Watts. And this storm, it flooded the community. It overwhelmed storm drains. About 250 buildings and homes were heavily damaged. 50,000 people lost power. 6,000 people actually sought aid from the county's emergency center. And so the county was contiguous, but the supervisory districts were not. And firefighters ended up rescuing about 100 people from wastewater and snow. I'm guessing that here in San Francisco, you know, snow is not something that's common. But, you know, when you have wastewater and snow, it's pretty cold. So the federal and the state government, though, were very slow to be able to aid this community in their time of need. And it was because these historical patterns of underinvestment and disenfranchisement that work along the lines of race and class, they continue, but that impacted this community in a real way. And the reason that it impacted them is because in 2001, Watts was split by incumbents into three districts at the congressional level. So they literally had no centralized representation in this area. And not only in 2001 did they get split into three districts or three congressional districts, but they got split into three different state Senate districts as well. And so they had three different people fighting for three different types of things, and they had no unified response other than that very localized response that they had. So in 2008, a ballot measure was sponsored by California Common Cause and the League of Women Voters and a bunch of others, and it passed. And as a result, when 2011 redistricting was completed, we had an independent citizen-run redistricting commission. And right now in California, most redistricting commissions are independent and citizen-run. There are some nuances in who makes the final map. In San Francisco, for instance, our final map is approved by the Board of Supervisors. The officials that serve on the redistricting task force, three are elected by the mayor, three are elected by the Board of Supervisors, and three are elected by the Election Commission. So the makeup of the board, some of the timing is a little bit different in different cities, but for the most part, most commissions are independent and they're citizen run and citizen led. So this style of redistricting has now been in place in California since 2011. And if you look back to our Watts case, because of this, after 2011, these people from Watts got together, their leaders testified before the California Redistricting Commission, and the end result was a unified Watts. They have essentially a whole kept together one state Senate district and one congressional district. So people kind of getting up and defining what their shared concerns and their shared values are really can make a difference, especially in these independent run commissions. So how do we prevent something like this from happening in San Francisco? We do have an independent redistricting commission in San Francisco that was just recently elected. I'll go through a quick timeline at the end of this. But the biggest lever that you have in this is defining a community of interest. It's the idea of keeping a group of people together because they have a shared set of concerns, or shared language or shared socioeconomic status, some kind of shared values within their community, helping to define that and then bring that in front of the redistricting task force so that they understand where you want your district lines to be drawn. So the strict definition of a community of interest is a population that shares common social or economic interests that should be included within a single district for the purposes of its effective and fair representation. Community of interests do not include political parties, incumbents, or political candidates. So this isn't like, I want this person to be my district supervisor, and so I want to stay in this district. That's not a compelling community of interest story, right? A compelling community of interest story is you have some type of shared concern. Beach erosion, cleanliness of the park, even things like crime or having a majority of renters in your neighborhood, something that binds you together from a social or an economic perspective. So that brings us down to what is a really a community of interest. And I'm going to go through one more little case study with you guys with Long Beach, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about some San Francisco stats that came out this year. So in 2001, they essentially drew this little boot in the city of Long Beach. And it was done specifically to draw around a single politician's house in Senate District 28. So it forced two other Senate districts to wrap around the house, and it cut the city of Long Beach into three Senate seats. So it sliced and diced the port area of Long Beach. And that's pretty important because they had a pretty strong and compelling reason why they had their own kind of community of interest there. So with this boot, what happened was the shared concern for people who were living near the port was air pollution was causing poor health. So these neighborhoods around the port, they were experiencing traffic and pollution from semi-trucks driving out of the port onto freeways, and they were distributing goods all throughout Southern California. So the families in these neighborhoods were suffering from health problems, and up to actually, the numbers are kind of staggering. Almost a third of families had an adult with asthma in the family, in this kind of smaller district that was drawn. But the way that the district lines were drawn, the representatives who had the ports in their districts were not the same as the representatives that had the communities who experienced the health problems from the port traffic. So getting that unification together for those neighborhoods into one district gave the communities the best chance to elect someone who would listen to and actually bullishly go after and address those concerns. So when you're talking about something like this, you're talking about trying to create testimony, right? Create compelling testimony that you can give in front of your redistricting task force. So you want to talk about your shared concerns and interests. In this case, it was addressing pollution and clean air issues, and they couldn't get their current representative to address it. You want to talk about shared identity, language. In this particular case in Long Beach, it was the fact that working class communities of color lived in this area, and making this pollution concern kind of more of a racial justice and environmental justice issue, that was compelling. And you also want to provide data to substantiate the testimony. So in this case, some of that data was around the number of people, the households who had at least one adult with asthma, the ones who had one child with asthma, and showing those statistics from those areas, and then using that as a binding mechanism for the other communities. And as a result, right, of their public testimony in 2011, they unified it. So they have a single representative, that boot is gone, they're one district, and they represent these health issues, and they talk about the types of issues where they're impacted by the ports and the freeways. Those things are actually being addressed in this area. I want to stop for 1 second and just ask if anybody has any questions. I'm not looking at the chat, so let me look at that really quick. No, nothing in chat. Okay, great. So I'm going to move on and talk a little bit about San Francisco. So this is basically, I'll share these slides with you. These are some of the ways that you can kind of reflect on your community of interest if you're trying to kind of come up with a way to advocate for your district lines to be drawn in one place or another. These are some of the questions that you can ask yourself. I'll share a worksheet with you guys at the end as well, where it's around kind of, what do I want to talk about? How do I want to testify either in person in front of the redistricting commission, or sometimes you can prepare a video and do it remotely. I'm imagining with COVID that they probably will be taking some remote testimony at this point in time. So these are the current district lines in San Francisco. And I pulled this map from the San Francisco Chronicle. So if you feel like your particular neighborhood is not represented on it, I don't mean any offense. but it does kind of, where are the district lines currently drawn? And it can give you an idea. And most new maps that would be drawn would be based off of this. Although I'm going to give you a couple of examples that came out of the Chronicle that are a little bit outside the box in terms of how they're thinking. So this is the current districts. These are the key districts that had population growth. So you're going to see District 6, District 10, and District 11 had the largest amount of population growth. District 1 had a little bit, but they're all kind of falling within a percentage point or two of one another, where District 6, District 10, and District 11 are the most likely to be impacted in the next round of redistricting, just because their population growth has been a little bit outside the norm, and they won't stay within kind of that 1 to 2% So these are the most likely areas to be impacted. And then probably adjacent districts as well will be impacted in some way. They'll either take on some people from another district, or maybe there'll be a completely, you know, outside the box redrawn map this year. You never know what's going to end up. Anything is kind of open. So if you look at the census data that came out in the end of August, you can take a look at some different ways to segment the city, right? This one is kind of an above the park and a below the park. You know, if I was going to do this, I probably would have done an above the park, adjacent to the park, and a below the park, right? So you at least would have three, but this would be a pretty substantial change, right? If we were to redistrict based on, park proximity to Golden Gate, for instance. Another one is looking at coastal versus inland, right? So taking the coastal districts or the people who are in the coastal areas, putting them in one district, right? And this would be really around the idea of a community of interest, right? You have coastal erosion, you have specific things that impact these communities that don't impact anyone else. And then you would split up districts within the kind of inland area so that the population would be roughly the same as the coastal one. And I'm not advocating for any of these. I guess what I'm saying is you don't have to look at the district map and go, oh, I want to move this four blocks over. You can actually really look at it and say, what do I think San Francisco should look like? What are the real communities of interest here? And you can submit proposals and advocate for things that are kind of not, I want four more blocks on this side or five more blocks on this side, but they're a little bit more extreme. When you go in front of the San Francisco Redistricting Task Force, if you choose to give public testimony. And then this just shows population changes. So the big areas are going to be 6, 10, 11. And then you'll also see kind of Lakeshore down here where you've seen some population growth as well. A lot of other places have stayed stagnant. Very few places, you know, regardless of what you might read in the paper about the mass exodus from San Francisco, very few places have seen any type of significant population decline at this point in time. And then just a timeline. So we just did all three, the Board of Supervisors, the mayor, and the Election Commission just put all of their people up for the Redistricting Commission at the end of July. I'd hope to have one because you guys scheduled with me about 3 weeks ago or so. I had hoped to have a date for the first Redistricting Task Force meeting, but they have not announced it yet. And so my guess is it may happen. Their initial convening meeting might happen sometime in September, before the end of September, but they should start meeting regularly by October. They'll have the census data. The first meeting is likely to be kind of the forming and storming type meeting where they're learning their roles. They're getting educated on what they need to do and what they need to accomplish, developing a timeline, electing a leader. But then they should be ready to take public testimony pretty quickly after that. And then the final map is actually due on April 15th, 2022. So there is some time if you are interested in trying to advocate again for the district lines for your district or a significant change in your district for you to prepare for it and give that testimony or get together a group of people who want to give that testimony with you. And then just on our side, if you're interested in seeing who's on the Redistricting Task Force, you can go to this link and I'll cut and paste that into the chat as well. Common Cause has some excellent resources for things like social media, organizing in your community. They have that downloadable template I was talking about for defining your community of interest. So if you're interested in kind of filling that out and understanding, you know, what do you feel like binds your community together? It's a great kind of thought exercise for you to go through. You can also hit our website at lwvsf.org redistricting. We keep it pretty up to date. And if you follow us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, if you're a social media person, we do a lot of announcements around redistricting. We did the announcement when the initial members were defined for each one of them. We'll definitely announce whenever the first meetings are happening and anything that's kind of going on in that space. I think I am done. So if anybody has any questions, I am happy to answer them.
I have a question.
Go for it.
I noticed that one of the districts had a significant increase in male population. I think it might be 6. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know specifically why the male population in that particular district. It was probably 6. Let me look really quickly. So District 6, yes, they did have a significant increase in male population. I mean, I'll give you my best guess, right? District 6 is Soma, and there's a lot of tech community there, right? And a lot of tech employees tend to be male. And so if I had to guess, I would guess it's people who are joining tech companies in Soma that happen to be men.
Yeah, that makes sense because I hear the numbers, but I always have a hard time knowing where they are geographically, you know, the district numbers.
And oh, I know. Also, seriously, we have so many of them. I mean, you're like, where I know what district I live in. I feel like I'm accomplished with that.
Yeah. And I'm in, you know, being in seven, it's a sprawling district too. And then another question, you showed the map that showed the increase and decrease in population. And there was a little polygon down by Lake Merced that had a serious decrease in population. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it looks like in that area, I think that, so what I read, and I don't know that I can speak authoritatively on this, but is that there was a larger kind of college population that was living in that area.
Sure.
And with colleges going remote, some people essentially went home.
Right. So that's just a snapshot in time, I guess.
Yes, it's a snapshot in time. It's a snapshot of when the census was taken. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that Soma thing could be the same thing because there might have been a lot of people who got stuck in the city because they didn't have any place to go.
Yep, exactly. So you do have COVID has made things kind of weird, right?
So this census needs an asterisk after it.
I know it does. It needs to be like this census taken during a pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't really know exactly where we know these people were here at this point in time, but you don't 100% know where they ended up, right? At the end of the day.
Thank you for taking my questions.
Will the testimony of the meeting, will it operate somewhat like the other meetings with city government? If you went to the planning commission or to the board of supervisors, is that sort of same environment where you'd come up and speak at a podium?
Yes, it's pretty much the same environment. My understanding is that those meetings are also taking some type of, like sometimes you can do remote testimony or you can do a prepared video. Right. I've seen some redistricting testimony from Southern California, because they aren't a charter city, so their deadlines are a little bit different than ours. And so I have seen them taking what I like prepared 2-minute videos, but it's very much the same thing as what you would see in other public meetings. If you've given testimony at other public meetings, it's going to be exactly the same thing. You're going to get up. In this case, you might benefit, and I think in actually other forums you benefit as well, from having a personal story, right? Something that you're talking about, especially if you're trying to draw a community of interest within essentially the district that you're proposing.
Are there any other questions?
I did see one. Let's see. Mary asked if the quantity remains consistent. So it doesn't have to, depending on how district lines get redrawn. I would say it's probably likely to. But it does not have to. If there is no hard and fast rule that you have to end up with the same number of redistricting or say the same number of districts at the end of a map being drawn.
Okay, so I have a follow-up question to that one. The charter for the city doesn't say how many districts there are for the Board of Supervisors?
The current charter does outline the number of districts. But that can, if you redraw the map, you can, it's just like we lost a congressional seat, right, in California in statewide redistricting, right? Mm-hmm. We could redraw the lines in a way that we don't have to have the same number of districts that we have right now.
That's interesting. And then my other question was, who does the redistricting for things like BART, other elected groups where they go by a geographic?
So BART is kind of weird because it's three different geographies that get together, right, mm-hmm. to deal with the BART board. So I don't know that BART would necessarily be impacted because I'm pretty sure, and maybe don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure BART is by county lines, right? It's not mm-hmm. necessarily districts. It's the counties that BART runs through are the people who contribute to the BART board, for instance. And so, or when they put out bond initiatives, those are the three those three counties are the ones that have to vote on them, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would impact, I think it's unlikely that it would impact BART. It's much more likely that it would impact, you know, your local supervisor, right? Who your local supervisor is.
This is very helpful. Thank you.
There's a question regarding the district lines for Senate and U.S. representatives.
So the things that I talked about today are really about local San Francisco, but there are redistricting lines that are being drawn right now that are for U.S. representation and senators. So it doesn't look like they're going to be significant, but there was some population decline in other parts of California. And so it does look like we've lost a congressional seat at this point. So a House seat, in California. And I don't think it's going to impact the Bay Area, but it will impact someplace else in California, right? In terms of either districts, you know, coming together or lines moving slightly in terms of the congressional districts.
Would it be a similar issue with our state representatives?
I think it's unlikely to impact state Senate, right? You may see things move around a little bit, but you're very unlikely to see, a loss of representation, I think, at the state level in terms of the total representatives.
But the statewide, as I understand it, the statewide, redistricting task force does look at the state level officers, not just the federal.
Yes, they do look at the statewide officers, not just the federal level officers. Yes, they look at both. And that task force is an independent citizen-led task force. All right. So thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hold on, one more question.
Because there are currently any commuters in it. So in danger of being broken up in San Francisco, I think there's a lot of angst around, at least from what I've heard, around the Tenderloin, and that area potentially being broken up, where they have kind of common issues and common causes. We're just starting to see community groups really come out and advocate for one community of interest over another in the local San Francisco area. I would say Southern California has a lot of advocacy going on. They've seen a huge population, not just a like increase or decrease, but a change in their population. And so communities that were together 10 years ago are looking a little bit different these days. So I would say that in San Francisco, I haven't heard of like some massive urgency other than I've seen some advocacy around the Tenderloin area. And I've seen a few other groups, around kind of District 11, a little bit of, kind of controversy in kind of the Excelsior, Ingleside kind of area where people are not 100% happy with where their lines were drawn, I think, in the last redistricting. And so they're trying to figure out how do they make the right lines get drawn this time. And they've also seen some population growth, so they know their lines are going to get redrawn. The ones that you're likely to see the most public testimony from are probably ones that have seen population growth, where you have people who, like 6, 10, and 11, where people really have a strong opinion of where the new line should be. And since we have until the 15th of April and the task force really hasn't convened yet, it's hard to get a good handle on kind of what are going to be the issues. I think they're going to be emerging over the next couple of months.
Thank you very much. We'll put all those links on our website, and you can see a recap of the meeting on the Facebook page.
Awesome. So, thank you very much. I really appreciate you guys having me, and certainly let me know. Feel free to reach out. I'll leave my LVWS email if I can type while I'm talking. If anybody wants to reach out and ask any questions.
Well, I'll put all that on the website. And again, Daniel, thank you very much for being flexible time-wise tonight and giving us some really good information on kind of one of those little mystery things of politics.
I know. It always feels like, oh, it only happens once every 10 years, right? So nobody really is an expert, I think, at redistricting because they only have to pay attention to it once every decade, right?
Perfect.
So it's a hard one. Thank you guys very much. Have a great evening.
You're quite welcome. Bye. Thank you. Good night, everyone.